happy 2009, and welcome to This Way Out, the international gay and lesbian radio magazine. I'm Greg Gordon. The global struggle for LGBT equality during the past year was also reflected in the movies, on television, and online. We'll catch up on the latest news of that continuing struggle when our news wrap crew returns from their holiday break next week. But now, This Way Out's award-winning entertainment reporter Steve Pride recalls some of the queer moving images that moved him most during the past 12 months as we proudly present Pride on Screen 2008.
Hello, I'm Steve Pride. Welcome to a special Pride on Screen edition of This Way Out. Sit back, relax, and butter your popcorn while we examine the best LGBT images on screens both big and small for the year 2008.
I need some time. I just don't know if this is really what I want.
Seems like what you want.
Until I met him, I'd never known anybody to take such an interest in me.
Despite predictions following the success of Brokeback Mountain, 2 years later, most Hollywood studios continue to shun gay projects. Although Brokeback's lifetime domestic box office gross passed the $83 million mark, and Milk has pulled in over $15 million in just 2 months, these are exceptions rather than the rule. Gay films rarely break the $1 million mark. Lesbian films fare even worse. In fact, the box office gross for all 10 of my Pride on Screen 2007 picks is well under $2 million combined. Before we get to the top 10 theatrical releases, let's take a look at U.S. television and the increasingly important role of queer content streaming online. The writer's strike that began at the end of 2007 and carried over into 2008 meant fewer episodes for scripted TV shows, including our gay faves. Despite this, Kevin and Scotty finally got married on Brothers and Sisters.
Scotty, please take this ring as a symbol of my love and devotion.
And Luke and Noah had their second kiss on As the World Turns, only 6 months after the first one.
I'm not trying to pressure you or anything, but if you do decide to come out to him, this feeling, this freedom, just not hiding, that'll be normal.
Reality gave us Bronny on Make Me a Supermodel.
There are some mixed signals with Ben. I mean, I know he's married, but at the same time, like, he's kind of alluded to the fact that maybe if he's, you know, had a couple of cocktails or whatever, that he would be open to the idea of being intimate with a guy.
And fierce little Christian Siriano on Project Runway.
I'm kind of a big deal, because I'm kind of fierce, and I'm kind of a celebrity in my own head.
Real-life transsexuals got 15 seconds of fame, thanks to Candace Kane on Dirty Sexy Money.
Hey, you want to go back to Vermont? We can, pick a weekend.
Going to Vermont is just another giant secret.
I'm married and running for Senate.
I can't help how I feel, Pat. We never even stood in the street and kissed.
Isis on America's Next Top Model.
And my staff said, Tyra, there's something a little different about that girl. So what's different about that girl?
I was born physically male, but mentally, everything else, I was born female. Some people might say that I'm transgender. Some people might say transsexual. Personally, I prefer born in the wrong body.
And my friend Calpurnia Adams on Transamerican Love Story.
Transamerican Love Story is a dating show that features me as sort of a transgendered bachelorette with 8 eligible young men competing for my attention, and every week a guy is eliminated from the show until we end up with one man.
Or to put it in reality speak,
one transgender woman, 8 eligible bachelors, and no secrets.
We had the By the Way gays on Showtime's The Tudors.
I can't wait to ride some young French stallion while I'm here.
Well, between you and me, neither can I.
But my picks for small screen triumphs of 2008 are definitely Skins on BBC America, where Maxie stole my heart.
What happened?
Well, he's just, like, switched about me being, you know,
blonde.
No.
Sure.
Gay.
And Sordid Lives on the Logo Cable Channel.
Okay, that's it. I'm out of here.
Fine, leave.
But maybe it's time you learned compassion for others instead of being like every other actor and homosexual in this vapid town. All about me, me, me.
I thought therapy was supposed to be about me. And I am here because I am not sure that I am a homosexual.
Oh, trust me, honey. You are a big old queer.
But let's face it, actual television is so 2007. Most of my viewing is online. For a small fee, hundreds of LGBT films and programs can be streamed on Netflix or downloaded from TLA Video and HereTV.com, where I never miss an episode of the queer Canadian soap, Paradise Falls.
Ugh. Do you have anything without fruit?
Do you take Nick Braga as your lawfully wedded husband?
Oh, for God's sakes, I want a proper drink. You know, it's a typical fag wedding. You know, can't get anything unless it has fruit juice in it.
Who let her in here?
Well, you know, it's a free country. I can go wherever I want.
Get her out of here.
Hey, you know what? This is not a real wedding.
Mom, stop it. You are embarrassing yourself.
Three Way, the best lesbian sitcom you've never seen, is not on broadcast or cable. It streams free online at threewaytv.tv.
Well, Siobhan, you know, you look at Siobhan and you think, whore. But I look at Siobhan, and even though she's straight, I look at her and I think, opportunity.
Other free sites, like the Universal-owned Hulu.com, that's H-U-L-U, offer queerlicious content like The Times of Harvey Milk, My Best Friend's Wedding, and even Battlestar Galactica webisodes, in which we learn Lieutenant Gata is not a Cylon, but he is family. But the most amazing sci-fi pride on the computer screen is at StarTrekNewVoyages.com, where an independent online project called Star Trek Phase 2 imagines a fourth season of the original series, introducing Captain Kirk's nephew, Peter, and his boyfriend, Alex.
Will you marry me?
How many times are you going to ask me? I already said yes.
No. Here. On the Enterprise. I'll ask him to do it. Say yes.
Of course.
You know him better than I do. What do you think he'll say?
I don't know him at all.
We'll do it right after you finish rescuing everyone on the Copernicus.
I wish I was going.
I want you to go. You've got to be brave for both of us now.
Have I told you today how much I love you? Peter Kirk.
I love you too. Alex Freeman Kirk.
This is Yan Tan, director of Chow, and you're listening to the annual Pride on Screen edition of This Way Out.
So what's the big story on the big screen? What are my top 10 gay and lesbian films of 2008? Number 10, The World Unseen.
I'm Shamim Sarif. I'm the writer and director of The World Unseen. The World Unseen is based on my first novel, and it's set in South Africa in the 1950s. So we're at the beginning of the apartheid era. Set within the Indian community primarily, which is a community not many people know much about at that time. They know about the blacks, they know about the whites, but there were sort of all these little gradations in between that the South African government tried to keep in check. And my parents and grandparents are from South Africa, so that was kind of a personal beginning to the story for me, if you like, a personal backdrop. Because those stories of South Africa, of apartheid, of the injustices, were something that I grew up with in London.
My husband wouldn't like it. I'm offering the job to you, not your husband. You surprise me. Thought you had a fearless streak.
How would you know whether I have a fearless streak or not?
Wasn't it you who went out in the middle of the night to help an African who was hit by a car?
How could you know? There were only two people, myself and my husband.
Three. I know this government would like us to think they're savages, but Africans can speak as well as we can.
At its heart, I think it's about finding your voice. It's about daring to take steps to challenge the traditions of your society, your family, and in this case, the government.
Number 9, Breakfast with Scott.
Where's Scott now?
Child Services, Ottawa.
And he's okay there until we find Billy?
We feel we being Child Services, it would be better for the ward to settle into his permanent home. Or until we can find Billy. Your home.
What?
Congratulations. Your dad's.
According to star Tom Cavanaugh, who plays the closeted former professional hockey player turned closeted sportscaster turned unwilling dad to the flamboyant, effeminate Scott, it's the sports world that provides the conflict.
To me, it's a non-issue. But then again, it's fairly naive in the current geopolitical world to call it completely a non-issue. So in terms of sports, which is what Breakfast with Scott confronting, you know, homosexuality in sports, you know, when you talk about not an eyebrow being raised, it seems like in that world still, eyebrows are raised. It's a strange thing that there are gay athletes out there in the major sports, but not a single one is out of the closet. And it seems to be the last taboo that has to be hurdled. You know, it seems to me, especially in North America, you know, of the four major sports, you know, baseball, football, hockey, and basketball, nobody is out. And you can't tell me that there aren't gay people there, but the fact that the locker room culture is such that it is still not permissible or still frowned upon, there's something off there, something missing. You know, we're not trying to make a statement about that in Breakfast with Scott. We're not attaching any judgment to it one way or the other. I think if you try and send a message, you're trying to send a lesson out there, you're walking in a risky territory as filmmakers. I just think that that was just like, I think I just killed the movie right there. If anyone's listening to this, it'd be like,
Number 8, Antarctica.
Yair Rochner, the director and writer of Antarctica. I started to write the script when I was a student, and it was a totally straight script about young women in Tel Aviv, singles looking after love, like Sex in the City. But my life was developed from I came out, I found my partner, my husband, and my lover for the last almost 7 years, and the script was developed to gay and lesbian characters, and in the start it was very dark with you know, little bit good boys with serial killer behind everything and very strange stuff, and it became more light and light and light, and it's still crazy and bizarre and with a lot of comic dark or bizarre relief, but it's still a drama about loneliness. But I think it's the first time that all the characters are gay and lesbian in Israeli movie, and the first time that it's pure about love, romantica, romance. The first time that somebody is doing movie without any Palestinians or religious or poor people. It's pure fun movie about gay life in Tel Aviv.
Hi, this is Tom Fitzgerald, writer-director of The Hanging Garden, Beefcake, The Event, and Three Needles. You're listening to a special Pride on Screen on This Way Out, the international radio magazine for all of our sexually diverse communities.
And I'm Steve Pride. Number 7, A Jihad for Love.
My name is Birvez Sharma. I'm the director-producer of The Jihad for Love. I always say the film is about Islam, and that was a very clear motivation post-September 11th. I was very invested in trying to make a film that would have an important place in shifting the discourse about Islam away from a place of violence, away from everything that we see in the mainstream media. So in an interesting way, everyone in this film is really coming out as Muslim. Now, they do happen to be gay and lesbian, and their homosexuality is what brings them into deep and profound conflict with their faith. But for me, the film was really always about Islam and about everyone coming out as a Muslim.
Number 6, Chow.
It's strange that you and Mark were not together.
Why?
I don't know. It seems like you guys were right for each other. You were close.
You're forgetting something.
What?
Type. That wasn't his.
What do you think was his type?
Oh, I don't know. Someone more exotic looking. Preferably a foreigner, maybe an Italian.
My name is Yan Tan. I'm the co-writer and director of Chow. Chow is about two men who get to know each other over the span of a weekend as a result of the death of a mutual friend. The film came about when Alessandro Causa, who's the lead actor in the film who plays the Italian, he saw my previous film, Happy Birthday in Italy, and then he wrote me an email back in 2003. And we just started corresponding from that point. We just had very similar interests in film and music and a lot of stuff that has to do with the arts. And we just corresponded on that basis. And about a year after I met him online, I was toying around with some new story ideas, and one of them had a character that was based on him. So obviously when I started developing his character, I wanted his input on whether I was getting his character right. And so I was sending him stuff I was writing, and he would give me his notes. And just over time, he just became more and more involved with the development of his character and also the story of the film. And, you know, basically he co-wrote the script with me.
Number 5, Were the World Mine.
With the lyrics, deep breath.
We fairies that do run from the presence of the sun, we follow darkness like a dream, like a dream.
Hi, my name is Tanner Cohen, and I'm in this film called Were the World Mine, and Were the World Mine is a musical, film, fantasy extravaganza, and it follows the kind of the tribulations of this high school boy who feels quite trapped in his body and his sexuality and especially in his town. And so he reluctantly is cast in A Midsummer Night's Dream at his all-boys preparatory school. And he, with some help of kind of mystical, almost witch-like drama teacher, he attains the power of Puck, which is the character he's playing in the play. And so that means that he has this power to make people fall in love with whoever they see once he douses them in this potion. It's almost as if he's getting to live a day in the world that he fantasizes about.
Number 4, Save Me. In this riveting film, a sex and drug addicted young man, played by Chad Allen, is forced into a Christian-run ministry in an attempt to cure him of his gay affliction. Instead, he falls in love with another ex-gay wannabe, played by Robert Gant.
Hi there, I'm Robert Gant. It's a love story set against the backdrop of the ex-gay ministry, the reparative therapy movement. And it's just a really lovely, powerful film that I'm really grateful to have been a part of. You know, Judith Light and Chad Allen are my co-stars in it. The most important thing for us to get right was the Christian perspective, because that's the one that could most easily be vilified. And that a lot of people go into the movie thinking, oh boy, here we go. You know, it's going to be we're the angels, they're the devils, you know, like that whole sort of ridiculousness. Instead of, how is this woman operating from love as she sees it? And what are her flaws and what are her strengths and what, you know, where is she really coming from? You know, and to be fair to that. And I think also it became much more powerful than we anticipated because of our identification with our mothers, you know, and the roles that our mothers have. And Judith Light plays a mother who was in a lot of pain because of the loss of her gay son.
Number 3, Shelter.
I hear you've been to Gail Sean.
Surfing.
Well, you know about him, right?
What about him?
He's gay.
He's a little fat, Jeannie. We've been surfing together since I was 8.
Yeah, was that all?
Yeah, what do you say?
Mm-hmm.
Good.
Zach, I don't think that he's the best guy to be hanging out with all day half naked, if you know what I mean. Like, don't want Cody around that.
What? Why?
Zach, you're not a fag, right?
Jeannie.
Wait, you never tell me anything. How am I supposed to know?
What do you think?
I'm Jonah Markowitz. I'm the writer-director of Shelter. Shelter is a coming-of-age story about a young artist who is also a surfer. He falls in love with his best friend's older brother over the course of a summer, and he's also taking care of a child who is his nephew, and he sort of learns to create this family. While dealing with his own family, the family that he's born with, he learns to also create this family and create a family for this kid as well as for himself.
I need some time. I just don't know if this is really what I want.
Seems like what you want.
I just don't know if this is what I want, for good.
What's that supposed to mean?
It's not as easy for me as it is for you. You know, this is all totally new to me.
Look, we'll get through the game thing.
No, it's not that, Sean. You just don't get it, okay? I can't just take whatever I want. My life is not like that.
Number 2, Chris and Don.
My name is Tina Mascara, and I'm the co-director of Chris and Don, A Love Story, with my partner Guido Santi.
I'm here. Ready to...
What inspired this? What got you involved in this?
I first got involved because I was introduced to Don Bacardi through one of the producers of the film, Julia Scott. Her family befriended Don Bacardi and Christopher Isherwood for many years. And I just arrived in the States in 1990s. And eventually I met him, I became friend with Don. And one night he showed me this amazing 16mm footage that he shot with Christopher Isherwood as they were traveling around the world in the 50s. And I was so impressed, and I was surprised that nobody ever asked him about the possibility of making a documentary on his life story, because it's so extraordinary. Both Don and Christopher Isherwood were pioneers in being openly gay as a couple in the 50s, and they were 30 years apart. So they had a very interesting story.
Writer, artist, activist, Don Bacardi.
Tell me about Christopher Isherwood. What was he like?
Oh, he's the most charming man I ever met. What was wonderful about him was his genuine curiosity about people. He wasn't faking it. When we met, he asked me all kinds of questions about myself. Until I met him, I'd never known anybody to take such an interest in me. And he was particularly interested in young people and young men in particular. And he wanted to know what their lives were like, what it was like to be them, what they were interested in. And you can always tell when somebody asks you questions, whether they're just making conversation, whether it's just idle curiosity, or whether it's the genuine article. And his was genuine.
This is Gavin Newsom, mayor of San Francisco, the most diverse and welcoming city in the world. And you're listening to Pride on Screen on This Way Out, the International Gay and Lesbian Radio Magazine.
And number one, Milk.
My name is Harvey Milk, and I'm here to recruit you!
A movie about Harvey Milk has been in development at Warner Brothers since 1992. Some of Hollywood's best screenwriters have churned out over 20 scripts, and over the years, Daniel Day-Lewis, Kevin Kline, Richard Gere, Kevin Spacey, James Woods, Robin Williams, and even Steve Carell were all prospective Harvey Milks. So when I heard that Gus Van Sant was in San Francisco filming Milk with Sean Penn in the title role, I was surprised it wasn't connected to the Warner Brothers project.
By the time Lance brought the script over, which was a year and three quarters ago, almost 2 years ago, the Warner Brothers project had been in a state of somewhat dormancy, because it had been 16 or so years, and it had been in and out of different incarnations, and there was a new incarnation with Bryan Singer, but he was very busy, and it was just one of those projects, like in development type of projects, that I think it only affected us in the sense of, like, you know, if we start going on it, does that make the other projects start going too, which I think existed for us. We never really knew what was going on. We were sort of in the dark. It was very spy versus spy.
In this scene from Milk, Harvey and his team have just moved in to his new office at City Hall.
Okay, first order of business to come out of this office is the citywide gay rights ordinance, just like the one that Anita shot down in Dade County. What do you think, Lotus Blossom?
I think it's good. It's not great.
Okay, so make it brilliant. We want Anita's attention here in San Francisco. I wanted to bring her fight to us. We need a unanimous vote. We need headlines.
Dan White is not going to vote for this.
Dan White will be fine. Dan White is just uneducated. We'll teach him.
Hey, Harv, committee meets at 9:30. Hey, you guys. Say, did you get the invitation to my son's christening? I invited a few of the other Supes, too.
Oh, well, I'll be there.
Great. Thanks.
Did he hear you? What the
f***? Are you going?
I would let him christen me if it means he's going to vote for the gay rights ordinance. We need allies.
I think he can
hear
you.
We need everyone.
Jesus.
I don't think he heard you.
Is it just me, or is he cute?
We all have our time machines. Memories take us back, and our dreams take us forward. The film Milk offers a little of both, and according to Gus Van Sant, during filming, the lines between then and now began to blur.
There was a take where we were using sort of most of the room, but the camera was pointed in one direction, and there were three or four actors in the scene, and it's at night. I think it might have been the night where Ann Cronenberg, like, gets the endorsement. And there were some people sitting in the sofa, which was outside, and during one of the takes, Just somebody walked in from outside and sat down on the sofa during the shot. And after the shot was over and we yelled cut, he got up and walked out. And so the actors were like, did you see that guy? And I said, who was it? I didn't see anybody. And they said, no, somebody walked in and sat down and walked out. And I was asking him, like, what he looked like, and they kept describing Harvey. And I thought, well, maybe that was like the ghost of Harvey just sort of walking in for a brief second.
And if it had been Harvey in the camera store, what would Dustin Lance Black have said to him?
Oh, I mean, to Harvey, you know, I would say thank you to Harvey. Harvey, I mean, I know it sounds corny, but when I first heard his story and I was a teenager, I was very closeted. I was sort of a dark kid, you know. I was, it's not easy keeping that secret, especially in a world where, you know, in the Mormon church, it is damnation. And to hear about even the notion of an out gay man, like, that was new. I didn't know what that was. I thought, if you're gay, it's shameful, you hide it, and you try to beat it down. And I didn't know that you could just sort of be out, much less be openly gay and elected to office and celebrated by people. And I don't doubt that it kept me alive long enough to finally find a place where I was strong enough and comfortable enough to come out of the closet.
Milk is an amazing accomplishment and an inspiring movie and a safe candidate for one of the best gay films ever made. To recap, the Pride on Screen 10 Best Films for 2008 are: number 10, The World Unseen; number 9, Breakfast with Scott; number 8, Antarctica; number 7, A Jihad for Love; number 6, Chow; number 5, Were the World Mine; number 4, Save Me; number 3, Shelter; number 2, Chris and Don; and number 1, Milk. For more information on queer cinema, drop by my website, prideonscreen.com. This is Steve Pride. Thanks for listening.
Thanks for choosing This Way Out, the international lesbian and gay radio magazine. This week, Steve Pride brought us Pride on Screen 2008, and Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. This Way Out is made possible by donations from our listeners. Thank you. Log on to thiswayout.org to see how you can support our work, hear our podcasts, or subscribe to CDs or cassettes of our programs. To receive our weekly program email alerts, email tworadio@aol.com. You can also write to us at P.O. Box 38327, Los Angeles, California, 90038, USA. For Associate Producer Lucia Chappelle and the entire This Way Out family, I'm Greg Gordon. Happy New Year, and thanks for listening on WCBN Ann Arbor, Michigan, KPOV Bend, Oregon, Planet FM, Auckland, New Zealand, and more than 175 other stations around the world, including this community radio station. And we're all going to stay tuned.